So as has been my practice over the last couple of years that we have been here, this is our third summer, we have taken some time to sort of recap where we have been this summer with our youth group. I know that Bill always does a really good job of trying to align some of the things that we're doing on Sunday nights, Sunday mornings, with some of the same sorts of things that we have been doing in class, but I thought it would be a good idea this morning to kind of let you know the journey that we've been on and what we have been talking about. Our theme this summer has been soul influencers. That may be a common concept for you, and it may not be. If you are on any social media platform, the idea of an influencer has a certain connotation to it. Whether it's TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, Snapchat, there are people who are considered to be influencers, people who have a channel and they have followers, and because of that, they have a voice, they have a say, and the things that they do, the things they support, are an influence to the people who follow them, and advertisers has picked up on this. If you've ever been to a YouTube or gone to a YouTube video and had an ad before it and were slightly annoyed by it, just know you should be even more annoyed by the fact that the owner of that video is getting paid. Because that advertisement is there, whether you click on it or not, they are getting paid. In fact, I was astounded to learn one of the highest grossing people on YouTube is a mom who simply opens up toys. That's all she does. She opens up toys so that parents can see what they look like, and she makes $12 million a year doing that. Just think about that the next time you go to YouTube. You're helping pay for someone to do whatever it is that they are doing on there. But these are the voices. These are the people that we are paying attention to and that we are listening to, and that does something to us. And so we have purposefully decided that we want to think about what it means to be an influencer and how we are being influenced. And so there are two threads that our summer have been following as we've gone along. And the first is that we ought to choose the kind of influence that we want to be. And the second thread is that we should choose what we allow to influence us. And so this morning I want us to think very briefly about those two lines of thinking. And I want to start with choosing what we allow to influence us. Whether you know it or not, everything that you do, everything you participate in, everything that you take in, the media, the books, whatever it is, all is doing something to you. It is shaping you. It is molding you in some particular way. It is having an influence on you. And if you don't believe me, just consider the fact that the marketing and research industry, advertising, is a $1 million organization. They get paid to only think about how to get you to think what they want you to think, to buy what they want you to buy, to vote who they want you to vote for, to believe in what they want you to believe in. Everything we do, all of these things are doing something to us. Therefore, we have to do the intentional and hard work of choosing what we allow to influence us. You know, Jesus paints it in an interesting light in Matthew chapter 6 in the Sermon on the Mount. He has this interesting metaphor where he says the eyes are the lamp of the body, and if our eyes are full of light, the body will be good. If the eyes are full of darkness, we'll be evil. And then he goes on to say, where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. And it's an interesting metaphor, but what he's getting at is whatever it is we pay attention to is what we are on the inside. Where our treasure is, what we take in, what we devote ourselves to, what we spend the most time with is going to do something to who we are on the inside. So everything we engage in, everything we take in is subtly shaping and molding our wants, our wishes, and our desires. Sometimes in surprising ways or ways that we don't even know is happening. You might hear something in the background and know what song it is, not knowing you ever really knew that song, because at some point your subconscious is taking that in. And so we must do the hard and difficult work of choosing what it is we shine our light on, to choose what we are going to take in, to be intentional about what we consume. And so on Wednesday nights, we have been thinking about this. Jared's been doing a series where we think about the kinds of influences that we have, the kinds of ways we are being shaped and molded by the world, and then offering not just a, well, that's too bad, but offering instead a counterpoint, a practice, a discipline that we engage in to try to fight against these sorts of influences. Things like solitude and silence, where we slow down and simply focus on God. Or rather than, as the world would have us do, constantly think about ourselves and what we can get and what we can do, to instead practice acts of charity and hospitality and service. Rather than allowing, sitting sort of idly and taking in all sorts of things that we don't even really fully comprehend how it's shaping who we are, instead, we must be intentional about what we choose to take in, about how we choose to spend our time. I'm not saying that we just completely jettison everything there is, but what I am suggesting is that we closely examine how much time we spend on any given thing and ask ourselves, is it more than what we spend feeding ourselves God in the pursuit of holiness, in the pursuit of things that really matter? And so the second thread that we've been following is that we should choose the type of influence that we want to be. Every single one of you has the power to impact and influence the world. Now, I know that sounds like a very grand statement, and normally when we think about being an influencer, we think about people with large platforms and big voices. We think about athletes or celebrities or movie stars or politicians or youth ministers. Just kidding, just making sure you're all awake. But we tend to think about these people who have major, loud voices that have all kinds of access to all kinds of people, and they have a huge voice and a huge say. But you have a say as well. Whether it's big or small, you have a voice. You have the ability to influence, for good or for ill. Just consider this for a minute. How many of you have ever had your day just ruined because someone cut you off in traffic? How many of you have ever had your mood destroyed because just as you were about to get to the last case of Diet Coke at the grocery store, somebody swoops in and takes it before you do? Or maybe someone makes an offhanded remark that reminds you of all the things you hate about yourself. Then you know what it is to be influenced. Maybe you've been the one doing those things. On the flip side of that, how many of you have had your day brightened because someone made a kind comment about you that was encouraging? Or maybe you went to lunch with someone and out of nowhere, they just bought your lunch for you. Or maybe you know someone who, when you're around, you just feel better because they have sort of an inner light and an inner joy that you just want to be around. Everyone has the power to influence. Sometimes we dismiss it because it seems so small, but the power of one righteous person is undeniable. Bill shared an article with me at the beginning of the summer, and I was trying to find it, and I couldn't find it, so I can't remember who wrote it, but he talks about the power of one, the power of one person to make a huge impact on the world around them just by virtue of being a faithful follower of God. In Genesis chapter 30, Laban says to Jacob, "The Lord has blessed me because of you." In Genesis chapter 39, from that time, Potiphar made Joseph the overseer of all he had, and the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. Or maybe you remember the story of Paul in Acts chapter 27, when the storm comes upon him and the angel says in the midst of the storm, "Don't be afraid, you must stand before Caesar, and behold, God has granted to you all of those who sail with you." And then finally, a sobering story in Jeremiah 5. "Run to and fro through the streets of Jerusalem. Look and take note. Search her squares to see if you can find a man, just one who does justice and seeks truth that I might spare her." And of course, the tragedy was not one person could be found in Jerusalem. And so the Lord destroys Jerusalem. Just by virtue of being who you are in Christ has the power to change the lives of those around you. How many of you have ever experienced maybe your coworkers or people at school or others changing at least slightly their behavior around you because they know who you are? Maybe they watch their language. Maybe they don't talk about the same things they normally talk about because they know that's not who you are. Just by virtue of being you, you have influenced them in a positive way. Do not discount the influence that you have. It's going to happen no matter what. So choose how you are going to influence the world around you. Our Sunday mornings, we have spent time looking at different men and women of the Bible to examine the kind of influence they had and what that influence looked like and the impact it had. In the case of one story, we're going to see how one person's small amount of positive influence in her tiny corner of the world had an effect that ripples out across history and touches us today. So I want you to turn to the story of Ruth. It's one of my favorite stories. This is ultimately a story of redemption and restoration. And while the book is titled Ruth, it's really Naomi's story. It's Naomi's restoration and redemption that occurs throughout the pages of this story. But what's fascinating to me is how it unfolds, how it happens, why her restoration comes about. So as we begin this story, we're told a few things that set the stage. In the days when the judges ruled, there was a famine in the land, and a man of Bethlehem in Judah went to sojourn in the country of Moab, he and his wife and his two sons. In just a few words, we have a lot of information. It's during the time of the judges, when the judges ruled, so we know it's not a great period of Israel's history. There's a lot of unrest. Then there is a famine in the land, so there is very little food, there is very little resources. And then we have this family, this Jewish family from Bethlehem, who travel to Moab, their ancient enemy, simply because they're hungry and they need something to eat. And the story just goes downhill from there. As they're in Moab with Elimelech and Naomi and their two sons, Elimelech dies. And Naomi is left with her two sons, who then take Moabite wives, something they never should or would have done. 10 years later, the two sons die. And here you have Naomi, a widow, Jewish, living in a foreign country, and all she has is her two foreign daughter-in-laws. Realizing her situation and hearing that things are improving in Judah, she decides that she is going to return. She is going to go back and just hopefully, just maybe be able to be brought back into her family. Maybe someone can take her in because she can't do it on her own. And knowing how hard it is going to be for her as a single widow to make it in this world, it's going to be that much harder if her daughters-in-law come along with her as foreigners and also widows. And so she begs them to stay behind, to return to their houses, to be blessed. And one of them does. Orpah turns and goes home, and while we might judge her for that, the text does not, because it is the sane and sensible choice. But Ruth returns with her. And when they return to Bethlehem, they say, "Can this be Naomi?" And it's interesting what she says. "No, I'm not the same person I was, so don't call me Naomi any longer," which Naomi means pleasant. Instead, she says, "Call me Mara," which means bitter. "Because the Lord has dealt calamity upon me. He has stretched out his hand against me." I want you to think about the journey that Naomi has been on. Here she is with a husband and two sons. Things are going well for her. But because they are hungry and in need of food, they travel somewhere where they shouldn't have gone, and she loses everything. Not only does she lose everything, but she has gained two additional problems. Two women who are now a part of her household, and she can't provide, she can't take care of them. So she has been up here, and now she has been brought low to the point where she feels it's no longer who she is. She is a different person. Now she is empty, and she is bitter. Now I want you to turn to chapter 4 and look at the end of the story. Verse 14 says, "Then the women said to Naomi, 'Blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a redeemer, and may his name be renowned in Israel. He shall be to you a restorer of life, a nourisher in your old age.' And the women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, 'A son has been born to Naomi.'" What a complete reversal of fortune. Here you have someone who has been so rocked by her circumstances that she decides she can no longer be called a pleasant person, but instead she has to re-identify herself as Mara, a bitter individual who feels as though God has abandoned her. And by the end of the story, she is Naomi once again, who is blessed, who has been restored, who has been redeemed. somewhere in the middle, something amazing has happened. Somewhere in the middle, she has gone from being bitter and empty and hopeless to full of hope and fully restored. So what happened? It all comes down to just one person, Ruth, and the choice she made about who she was going to be and the kind of influence she was going to have in the world. Now, I know may you say, wait a second, what about Boaz? Because you didn't mention Boaz, and his name was right there in verse 13. So Boaz took Ruth, and she became his wife. But I would say that even Boaz and what he did is a result of because of who Ruth was. All we know about Boaz is that he was a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech. So we know that he is a relative of Elimelech's family. And we know that he could be a redeemer, a kinsman redeemer. Now, this is a little bit of a strange practice in which if someone were widowed and lost everything as Naomi and Ruth had, someone who was connected to the family could come in and redeem them and their property and restore them and perpetuate the name of those who were lost. And that just so happened to be Boaz, except there was someone else that should have been in his place who decided to walk away. And again, the text doesn't say that was a bad thing. It was the sensible thing for him to do because it could have messed up his situation. Yet Boaz chose not to. He chose to redeem this family. Why? Because of what he says in chapter 2, verse 10. Ruth falls on her face, bowing down to the ground, and says to Boaz, "Why have I found favor in your eyes that you should take notice of me, a foreigner?" And Boaz answered, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me. How you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that did not know you before. The Lord repay you for what you have done, and full reward be given to you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have taken refuge." And then she says, "I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord. You have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, even though I am not." Everything that has happened in Naomi's life is because of Ruth, because she chose kindness. She chose loyalty. Back when Orpah walked away, notice what Ruth says. She begs Naomi, "Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you, for where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people will be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May the Lord do so to me and more, if anything but death parts me from you." Everything that happens in this story happens because of Ruth, because she chose how she was going to be an influence. She chose kindness when she could have walked away. She chose loyalty when it would have been easier for her to go back to her home. She gave up her home, she gave up her country, she gave up all of her old gods in order to embrace God, in order to embrace Naomi. And because of that, people noticed. She quietly went to work in the fields and became noticed as someone who was a hard worker. People noticed what she was doing for her mother-in-law, and the story makes its way to Boaz, who was inspired and influenced by her kindness and her loyalty to go above and beyond his duty and redeem this family. It's such a beautiful, small little picture, small little story that we have of kindness and loyalty. But this is a story that reaches out and touches us today. Because I want you to notice once again how this story ends. A son has been born to Naomi, and they called him Obed. And he was the father of Jesse, the father of David, who, of course, we know goes on to provide the lineage that Jesus came from. This story of Ruth, who chose kindness, influenced the world in amazing and incredible ways, influenced Boaz to choose to be kind in return and to redeem this family, to restore them to their proper place. And because of that, we have Obed, Jesse, David, and then Jesus. What an amazing story of the power of the influence of one person. It wasn't big and it wasn't flashy, it was simple. It was a choice that she made about who she was going to be. There are two things, I think, as we close, we can take away in this story. First, I think we see our own stories mirrored in that of Naomi. She reflects the reality of who we are, recipients of unmerited love and kindness. Our redemption, our restoration is due to another person's loyalty, another person's faithfulness, another person's kindness. And so our task is to allow ourselves to be influenced by the story of Christ's redemptive act on the cross. The kindness and the faithfulness that he showed in that moment extends to us today. And it ought to be the thing, the only thing, that shapes and influences our life. Ruth's journey offers a little bit of a different lesson. Her story shows that God does not choose agents of redemption according to human standards or the expectations that we might have. And so God may be working through you, through your relationships, through the small interactions that you have every day to change someone's emptiness into fullness, to provide a glimpse into who the character of God is, or who God is, as seen in you, and who you choose to be, and the way you choose to influence the world. And who knows whether or not your kindness and your influence might just be what your friends and family need to embrace all that God has done. And so this morning I want to offer you those two choices, the choices that are before us every single day. Choose. Choose to decide what you are going to allow to influence you. Choose to be intentional about what you pay attention to and what you spend your time doing, and how you spend your time shaping who you are. And then from that, choose the kind of influence you are going to be. Whether it's something you'll sit on, whether you allow your frustrations of the day to carry over to your relationships, or whether you allow the who is influencing your life to shape the kind of influence you are going to be. Those are the choices before us this morning. Maybe you need to choose to allow the influence of who God is and what he has done in Christ to influence you to the point where you accept him and put him on in baptism. Or maybe you need to choose to put your life back where it needs to be, being the kind of person that God has asked you to be. We're moving into a time of communion in just a minute in which we recognize and we remember the greatest influence over our lives, that of Christ on the cross. Before we do so, though, we pause to offer you a chance to respond in whatever way you feel you need to. So choose this morning as we stand and sing.